Hello and welcome back to the West Photo podcast, produced from the West Photo office in the University of Westminster's School of Arts. My name is Luke Herlock. This episode features Spanish photographer Bego Anton. Bego was in Paris to sign copies of her book, The Earth is Only a Little Dust Under Our Feet, published by Overlaps in 2018. I managed to catch her just before her signing. She talks on how she came to the project and her experience of turning it into a book. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy the podcast. We've got Bego Anton here at Polycopies. I'd just like to ask you first how you got started in photography, what your kind of working practice involves.
Well, my idea at the beginning, when I had to decide what I was going to study, was to become a journalist. So I did journalism, but then I realized that that had nothing to do with me. I mean, there was not a lot of creativity involved. So I don't know how suddenly I realized that I could also be some kind of journalist taking pictures, not like photojournalist, but I could tell stories in a different way. Not writing them, but taking pictures of those. So that's how everything began. I ended up studying a course of photography in Barcelona, and that's when everything started.
I don't know if you want to tell me a bit about your new projects, your project with Overlaps in Iceland, The Earth is Only a Little Dust Under Our Feet.
It's a long title. Well, this project is like, to summarize, it's about how Icelandic people believe in the magic beings or beings from the earth. I mean, trolls, fairies, elves, huldu folk, and all kind of magical spirits, or fairies, or unicorns, all this kind of world, magical world. So I discovered this project when I suddenly was searching online and I found the elf school in Reykjavik, and I was like, oh, what is this? I have to take this course. And then when I was there, thing is that they give you a diploma when you finish, like certifying that you know everything about this hidden world. So that's how everything started. From that moment on, I decided to travel around Iceland, looking for the people who have the ability to see them, and also looking for the places where these beings are supposed to live. Because the incredible thing here is not like, it's not that we are talking about a belief, is a reality, because these people can actually see and touch and be in contact with these beings from the earth. So they can see them with their eyes and touch them. So that's the incredible thing, I think.
When people first discover sort of fantasy beings in sort of books as children or something, then do you think that medium lends itself to this kind of idea of the fantasy world, because you're looking, so when you discover your project, it's in the form of a photo book.
Yes. You mean that why I ended up doing a photo book?
Yeah, more or less. It's a very roundabout way. Yeah.
Well, you said it very well when you were asking the question, like it was like a fairy tale. Mm. So for me, it made sense to put all my experiences in a book, also because it was not only about taking pictures, but also about telling the stories of these people that I was meeting. So the best way that I could make all these elements work was on paper, I think, much better than in an exhibition. There is an exhibition as well for the project, but I think that the best way of doing it is with a book. So that's why I ended up working with Nicolas Poli, he's the designer of the book, who helped me to put together all these different elements, like archive images, my pictures, the stories I wrote down about the experiences people told me. So there were many, many different elements. And for me, it was really difficult to find out like a solution to put them in the book. So here, the work of Nicolas is like super strong. I mean, that it's super important. I mean, like, we really work together on this. And yes, it's like a fairy tale. The design and everything is like a fairy tale. Thing is that it's not a fairy tale, it's reality.
And do you think that's how you've managed to capture the kind of reality of, I guess, what you can't capture? So you photographed the people and the landscape and everything around, but you could never photograph the beings themselves.
So,
Yeah, was a challenge, because how do you photograph the invisible or what you can see? Because unfortunately, I wasn't able to see the beans from the earth. So what I ended up doing is appropriating the stories that the people told me, like the descriptions, and recreating those images. Like, for example, everyone told me about colors, like people's aura, or they could see bright colors around the stones where the elves live and things like that. So I thought, like, maybe I can apply color to photograph the invisible. So that's why there is a lot of different colors and sparkling things and everything in the book. Because for me, when you see, when there is a presence, there is color in the book.
Okay.
So that's how I solve it. And for example, there's another picture of a woman bringing this, hugging an invisible being. We cannot see it, but Brindis can see it, right? Can see the hoodoo folk she's hugging, and I'm sure that some of the people who can see the magical world is able to see the hidden person there as well.
But you can't, can you see them or no?
No, I never saw them, but I have to say that I had some feelings. I had this feeling that they were around me somewhere. I don't know how, like if they were protecting me or something like that. And I had some weird experiences, like once that I met a woman in her house. And when you go into a house in Iceland, you have to take off your shoes because outside it's dirty or wet, so you have to be in your socks when you enter the house. So we were sitting on the sofa and I felt someone like taking my sock on the right, and I asked her, like, do you live with someone or with an elf or someone? And she said, yes, I live with an elf, and she's on your right. And I was like, oh my God. So, I mean, how could I imagine this? Like, I don't know if it's true or not, but I don't mind, because I had this feeling for true, and the people who I met, I'm sure they believe everything they told me. So for me, it's completely real and valid what they say.
Yeah, so I guess fantasy has its own kind of visual language already in sort of in storybooks, in films, in this kind of thing. So when you were collating the book, obviously you want to, I mean, I'm guessing that you wanted to allude to sort of that kind of visual culture, but obviously how did you kind of keep it your own, how did you put your kind of spin on it?
Mostly, my reference was very old fable books, like from 2 centuries ago, that they have all these like fairy tales and things like that. So that was practically our starting point. So that was our idea of design from the beginning, like making the book look more like a fable book than a photo book. So we apply these codes to the book. That's how we did it. Like, for example, the cover is like this kind of vintage, like in the sense of it's a hardcover and you have the silver on it. There is no text and there is an illustration. It's super difficult for me to explain this in English.
Okay.
I can't find the words, but yes, basically the thing is that was the origin. Yes, we wanted to, there are also like a lot of small illustrations along the book of very old animals, cryptids they call it. These kind of animals, you don't know if they are real or not because there is not evidence of their existence, like for example unicorns. But I know many people who have seen them. So what we did was take those images of the illustrations of the unicorns and other different beings, and we put it along the book. So that's the way we solve it.
And in the book, you do include some sort of, I'm guessing, are staged images of the creatures, or
yes,
some creatures. Can you explain a bit about why you chose to try and show them rather than just in the other images, you're just alluding to them?
Do you mean in the illustrations?
So I know there's a picture of a horse with a horn and things like that.
That's a unicorn.
Unicorn, yeah. That's the one?
A unicorn.
Yes, a unicorn.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you captured it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the only creature I think that you can actually see in the book, the unicorn.
Okay.
Right? No, I'm thinking. I'm guessing. Well, there are many trolls. There are trolls as well.
Okay. There's a sheep with two heads.
Ah, yes, true. Yes.
Okay, brilliant.
But yeah, but that's part of the magic. I mean, I can't tell you the secret of it.
No. Of course, of course. Absolutely.
I also know a woman who saw you say it, centaur in English?
What's
This being that is half a man and half a horse.
Oh, a centaur. Yeah.
I don't have a picture of him, but they exist as well.
So the kind of experience of making the book, I know you included some kind of different techniques, so with some visible ink pages that you can kind of feel in amongst blank pages, and then obviously the stories there on different papers, and then the images themselves, mixture of full bleed, mixture of different formats and things. Do you want to just explain your process of choosing the sequence?
As I was telling you before, it was super difficult to put all these different elements in the book. So we made some kind of code to have them all in the book and make so they made sense as well. I don't know if you realize, well, two things. First, what you said about the invisible ink, that was like we had to do so much research to find it. Because my idea was to have it completely invisible and that suddenly, I don't know how you could see the message, but it was impossible to do that. So at the end, what we did was found this technique that if you put it on the light, it charges, so then you take the book into the dark and you can see the message very clearly. Then also there are many blank pages because this is the space dedicated to the magical pins. So some people can see them and some other can't. So that's very obvious, but well, that's it's not that obvious to put it in the book because we were, with Tiffany and Nico and I, we were like, we didn't know if we wanted to have it or not, and for me it was like a super great and simple idea to talk about the magical pins. And then the book, you can say that apart from these things that I have told you, that there are like two different books in one. One is a picture book and the other one is the story books. But we wanted to connect them somehow. So there is one index in the book where you can see different stories and each and some of them. And you can see that the numeration is different. One is with Roman letters and the other one is with normal numbers. So the idea was to connect the stories with the pictures using runes, the Icelandic alphabet. So when you see in the story there is a rune, you have to look for that rune in the picture book to find which story is connected with which image. I don't know if I explain it right because it's like it's difficult to explain, but
absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, but the thing is that our idea was also to so that the reader could immerse himself or herself into the book and find his or her own reading way and interact with the book. So yes, that's why I told you at the beginning that design is like important here. I couldn't have done it alone. So Nico here was super important.
Thank you very much to Bega Anton for speaking on this episode. You can find all our episodes with links to our guest websites online via iTunes. Just search for West Photo Podcast. Thanks a lot for listening.